My name is Dale Zimmerman. I am 16 years old. Today is
December 6th,
2018, and I'm speaking with Madeline Kokus, and or Mrs. Kokus as I know her, who is my student teacher, and we are in St. Louis, Missouri, recording this. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you're like as a child?
I grew up in the St. Louis County area. I am the oldest of three children. I have been told, and I remember being a very quiet child. I was very curious from a very young age about how things work the way that they do and why people act and speak the way that they do, but mostly I was just an extremely caring and protective big sister. I loved my family, loved being around family and friends. People are just, that's the language that I speak, is people. And I was a big reader and I had a very big imagination. I would daydream often. And frequent naps resulted in frequent, like, literal dreams. I had very vivid dreams as a child that then fed into my daydreams when I was awake, so that was interesting. I loved to play house and be the mom or the big sister in house, and I loved to be outside, like finding animals, but like not touching them, respecting their space. But I was very curious, like I said, and that extended to nature as well.
Would you say that there's anything that like fueled your curiosity towards life, I guess?
Yes, just a desire to have something to share with other people. Like, hey, did you know that this happened the other day, and this is why I think that happened? Or very, like I said, that active imagination, I think, goes with the curiosity, because if you're constantly thinking about, like, well, what if this happened, then you kind of begin to think that way about more practical things. So I think that the imaginative thought process fed into and fueled the curiosity a great deal, because if you can imagine, like, what if something could be like this, then you start to wonder and be curious about how to make that happen or what it would look like if it did.
And would you say that, like, your curiosity as a child has, like, helped you now in your career as, like, becoming a teacher?
Oh, absolutely. I think that one of the most important things that I get to do with my students is question the world together. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't see myself in the traditional role of transmitting factual information or information in general. I really think that learning happens when everybody's curious about some part of the world around them, and you know, we participate, like I said, we participate that in that together. It doesn't work if I'm not, you know, genuinely interested in it and genuinely wondering about it, it being the world, I guess. It doesn't work for me to tell other people, like, hey, you should wonder about the world around you. You know, I'm not going to, but you should.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the way that I like to approach, like, working with young people. Mm-hmm. I think it's much more helpful and authentically beneficial to do it together.
Okay, and then can you tell me about, like, one of the most difficult moments of your life?
Absolutely. I would say one of the most difficult moments of my life was actually my junior year of high school. I had a lot of mental health struggles. They were very long reaching and very hard fought on my end, and I was receiving help, but I actually ended up in the hospital as a result of some of the complications of just struggling with mental health. Mm-hmm. And it was hard. I think the hardest part was actually coming back to school and feeling like, oh, I just did this weird thing that makes me feel different, and now I don't know how to be normal around people again. But mm-hmm. then, you know, just slowly, as I kind of grew up, I became more resilient, and normal had less meaning as a word, so it got better. But that was a really, really hard time for me.
Mm-hmm. And mental health is like a really big topic nowadays, so I guess, do you have like any advice for people struggling with like mental health issues?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, always seek out help from somebody that you trust. Mm-hmm. As soon as you feel the need for it, or as soon as you feel like you're having thoughts or feelings that are different from what you would normally want to be thinking or feeling yeah. about yourself. But on the more practical side of things, one of the most helpful pieces of advice I ever heard was for when you're in the middle of, for me, it was depression. I, you know, it's just kind of a part of who I am. I think it's normal to talk about it. That's what it was for me. And in that case, or in the case of anybody who's going through it, one of the most helpful pieces of advice I ever heard was, sometimes when it's the hardest to do the things that you know you need to do for yourself, like different ways of taking care of yourself, reaching out to people you care about, even something as simple as like brushing your teeth can be hard if you're going through it, it being anything terrible. When it's the hardest to do that, that's when you need to do it the most. So, you know, after that, you know, struggles like that just don't go away overnight. Like, you yeah. have to practice coping with mm-hmm. them in order to, practice makes perfect, definitely applies here. There's no perfect way to deal with that sort of thing, but practice helps you get through it because you kind of learn the tools that you need to use.
Yeah.
Having that one in my back pocket has definitely helped. Mm-hmm. Just when it's hardest to do it, you know that you have to.
Okay. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been like the biggest influences in your life?
I would definitely start with my grandma. It's my mom's mom. Mm-hmm. I was her first grandchild, and she herself was a teacher and a speech pathologist and an expert. I can't remember her exact title, but she was what would have been, like, now she would have been called an SSD teacher. So she had a lot of different specialties, but basically what that meant for me was that she was extremely involved in just kind of exploring the world on a smaller scale with me from an extremely young age. She taught me to read. She taught me to write. I also went to preschool, so she was supplementing that, but sometimes it was a big question of, like, was the school supplementing grandma?
Yeah.
So she taught me to read, write. She taught me about state history and American history. She taught the revisionist version of American history that included the Trail of Tears and the Middle Passage. She talked to me about the Civil Rights Movement when I was we're talking 4 years old. So I was able to understand life in an entirely different way that sometimes made me the weird kid out, the odd kid out, but, you know, looking back, what an extraordinary gift for her to give me is this different understanding of the way the world worked,
yeah.
Different than what I may have gotten the chance to learn from a textbook, for example, which, you know, like, you know, all textbooks are different, but, you know, do you always get that, all of that information from your textbook? Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So it was helpful to have it from her. So that's one person. And then I would say that my mom is another person. She just, kindness came easily with having who I have as a mother. She has a wonderful understanding of people. Human relationships are very important to her and very interesting to her. So I was able to talk about that with her growing up in a way that really helps me to understand people.
So would you say that, like, your ability to like care for others was like passed down through your mother's side, or like it could be passed down through both sides, but would you say that like your grandmother and mother definitely helped like instill that sense of caring in you?
Yes, absolutely. It's really interesting. I don't know if you have taken a psychology course yet or heard of the term nature versus nurture.
Yes.
Yes. So are you born with it, nature, or are you taught it, nurture? That's one I always mess around with because I wonder, you know, what level of care I would have had for people if I had not had so many lessons so early on and so, like, condensed and repeated about, like, we are here to take care of each other. We are here to have each other's backs. Nobody wins if everybody's trying to hurt everybody else. Like, the best hope that we have for success, whether it be individual or collective, is to pull one another up and pat each other on the back if necessary. So, yes, I would say that.
Okay, great. So, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Stop worrying about boys. Definitely is a start. You do not have to be perfect. Good enough is good enough sometimes. Get more sleep. Drink more water. Take a break. It's okay to cry. Get it all out. And then stop. And go for a walk outside. Go outside, look at the sky. They're all things that I tell you guys now.
Yeah.
But I would say that probably targeting that perfectionism would have been up there. Reminding myself that certain things are not life and death. Mm-hmm. That there is another way. There is more than just one way to live your life. You don't have to just check the boxes that were given to you. You can make your own way. And that perfect way will look different than somebody else's perfect way. So
I know I've struggled a lot with, like, perfectionism. But in your, like, professional opinion, have you seen a lot of other kids who you've been, like, working with, like, struggle with that too? Or has it been, like, I don't know, because I feel like most people that I talk to, they're always like, oh my gosh, I have to get an A on this, or, like, stuff like that, and I feel like, I guess, like, a sense of community almost, but, like, I don't know if you see
birds
that
of a feather flock together, Dale. I would say that it's not, like, every kid is obsessed with perfectionism. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to, again, go back to psychology, very, very early psychology told us that there were two basic types of people. I'm using air quotes. Because that's so silly. Type A, who wants everything in the boxes and perfect and pretty and great and on time or early all the time, planning all the things. And then there's type B, who's like, yeah, whatever, man. It works. It's fine. We're all good. So I would say that if we were reducing it to those two basic types, I would say I see a healthy mix. Mm-hmm. Of both kind of like, whatever, I'll get there when I get there, and like more like, no, like you need to tell me, you know, exactly, you know, how a perfect A looks. But one thing I will say is that just so far in my student teaching and my practicum at Mizzou and being a preschool teacher, kind of a different animal there, but for high schoolers, I see a lot of like, how do I do this right? Tell me how to do this right. And that's one thing that I'm happy to take part in helping kids maybe unlearn a little bit, is that, well, okay, maybe just right for you is different from right for the guy next to you, so just do your best and don't lose any more hours of sleep over it, because you're not going to get hurt or die or anything. Education is important, but taking care of your overall well-being is important too, and feeding off of your own stress is like a snake eating its tail for food. That's not gonna work. That's not a sustainable structure.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me one of your happiest memories, like from your childhood or from like any time? It can be recent too.
One of my happiest memories. I would say that one of my happiest memories would have been Oh my goodness. The July of 2017. It started with kind of a bummer. My parents moved out of state. I had never lived so far from my family, and I was adjusting to that in a hit or miss way. Mm-hmm. But that month, I had the apartment I lived in college kind of to myself. My roommates were there and gone, but mostly gone. And I was able to read and write and listen to all of my music and have my friends over and meet new people and share ideas and get to know people who were also writers and also interested in music in a way that I've never been able to do ever before. It was like my first real summer vacation because I've always worked. And I did during that time, but I didn't also have the responsibility of like coming home and helping out around the house. It was like I took care of myself for that whole month, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever done. And I, surprisingly, weirdly enough, got friends out of it. It's interesting how that works sometimes.
Yeah.
So that was a very happy time in my life.
Okay, and can you tell me, like, what you are the most proud of, like personally and or professionally in your life?
Up to this point in my life, I am definitely the most proud of my like path through college. Because although I mentioned that junior year of high school was one of the most difficult times in my life, I had some extremely difficult things happen to me in college that, nevertheless, I met with kind of, like, every time something new would happen, I, kind of met it very gracefully. Not without effort. It was really hard. But I just kept on forcing myself to either land on my feet or get back up on my feet. And I did well. I learned a lot, actual things about people that I was friends with, but then also my studies became this kind of passion that I had never seen before, because in high school it was perfect. Mm-hmm. It needed to be perfect.
Yeah.
But in college it became like back to the curiosity element. So I'm proud that I honored my sense of curiosity and allowed myself to be that nerd in college and allowed myself to reach out to professors to get coffee, sometimes more than people my own age, because it has really shaped how I'm going to take the next few steps of life and then probably the rest of my life as well. So I'm very proud of what I did in college.
Okay. And you mentioned like the next few steps in your life. What are you, I guess, planning on doing? What's next for Miss Kokus?
What's next for Miss Kokus is right. I have so many plans and ideas that I cooked up with those mentors in school, but in the immediate future, I would like to stay in St. Louis for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I grew up here. I'm very comfortable with it, and from what I learned from colleagues and my friends from Mizzou who are currently teachers, that first year of teaching, it's very helpful to have support and comfort if you can. So it would be really lovely if I could find a placement in St. Louis, stay here for a couple of years before moving on to next plans, which a little further out, I would love to teach internationally, whether that's just in the summers or, you know, take a year off from teaching nationally and do something with a nonprofit organization or the Peace Corps. Perhaps I will do something with a university while I'm getting my master's that would allow me to at least travel, if not have that international teaching experience, because I'm extremely interested in several things. Like I said, humans, obviously. Language is very interesting to me. And this current kind of moment we're seeing in history with greater globalization in the digital age than ever before, mm-hmm, allows us to share ideas across country lines, which is nothing but valuable. Any teacher will tell you, sharing ideas is how we move our work forward in a wonderful way. And then because of what I believe education is, humanity forward with the work of educators and young learners. So those are things that I'm interested in.
Okay, that's great. Sorry, I just saw a question that I forgot I added. How has your life been different than, like, how you imagined it when you were younger? Like, did you think you would do something else, or did you always know you wanted to be a teacher?
This is such a fun question, because so I mentioned my grandma was a teacher. She was a preschool teacher and a pathologist. My mom, I forgot to mention, was also a preschool teacher, and she was the director of a preschool for 12 years.
Wow.
Which is quite an adventure, I can assure you. So from a very young age, I really, really wanted to be a teacher. You know, that big sister kind of that big sister role definitely also played into it. Like, hey, I'm here for you. Just let me know. I've been there.
Yeah.
It can be condescending and patronizing if, you know, you take it the wrong way, which, you know, everybody's human. But anyway, always said I was going to be a teacher, and then I hit the time when it was time to apply for college and stuff, and I was like, wait a second. I don't want to box myself in, because education appears to be an extremely straight path, although now I know there's branches and, you know, you can change anytime you want to. At that point, as an 18-year-old, I was like, no, wait, hold on. No, hang on, I'm scared. I'm scared of being boxed in and suffocated. I need to be a writer. I'm going to go in for an English major. So for a while, that kind of flip-flopped as far as major changes. The average college freshman changes something like 7 times before graduating. Yeah, it's not a straight path. So that's certainly one thing that changed. I also thought I would be, let's see, I think it was married at 26 with a baby by 28, because that is something that I was taught very early on by those same people that I mentioned that I care very dearly about, who matter so much to me. They come from generations and bubbles of exposure that are come with different values than what I have kind of learned my personal values are. So being raised by people with those values, you know, you kind of get into that mindset, and I think that's part of, you know, what impacted feeling like a weird kid. Like, yeah, okay, I guess that's what I have to do, but do I really want that?
Yeah.
You know, for 15 years or whatever. So at this point now, I'm certainly not planning on any of those things, because I would love to not try to plan anything at all, because I don't think those life moments should be a box that you are trying to check. I think they should be relationships that, you know, occur, heaven forbid, naturally. So I definitely did not see myself as, like, this aspiring world-traveling academic.
Yeah.
I saw myself as staying in St. Louis for forever, moving to Kirkwood, having a couple babies, and getting married, and still teaching. But so very different visions.
And would you say that, like, you're, like, more of an outside-the-box thinker in your family, like, trying to, I guess, not break the standard, or, like, mix it up a bit?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I am, oh my goodness. In my immediate family, so both my parents, they're together, and then I've got my younger brother, he's 2 years younger than me, and then my younger sister is 4 years younger than me, 2 years younger than my younger brother. It was nice. But even though my siblings and I share a lot of overlapping ideologies and values that are highly reflective of the time when we grew up, I'm still the odd one out of the three of us. And then as far as the five of us together as a unit, I stand apart as far as I definitely am more outspoken about things, not in a way that is trying to instigate anything, but like, if I see that there's a wrong, I'm trying to right it right away. And that's not common practice. Everybody else would rather just relax and play Scrabble. I'm like, but first, we need to resolve this. So definitely for that reason, yes. And then as far as, like, the traveling ideas and, like, learning about international education and international collaboration, I'm definitely the only person with those views who's passionate about pursuing that. They're like, good for you, not for me.
Yeah.
They're not exactly closed down to change, though, since my parents were born and raised in St. Louis and they just moved to New York. My sister just moved to Minnesota and my brother moved to Arizona. You know, movement is okay, progress is fine, but as out of the box as me, nah, they'll pass.
Yeah. I think I have another question here that's like similar. Can you talk about a time where you experienced like doubt over your beliefs?
That's a powerful question because it's actually causing me to shut up for a couple of seconds. Doubt about my beliefs. Yes, absolutely. I would say that throughout one of my last semesters at Mizzou, I took a women's and gender studies course that it was not just about like quote unquote the history of feminism, the quote unquote three waves of feminism, which exist, but you know, they're constantly changing and everybody has a different definition of them. So during that period of time, like, there are certain details about being a person who often participates in feminist criticism, whether it be literary or cultural and social criticism. There are details about it that just because of history and sociology and public health, these details exist, but you don't ever hear about them until you get into an intensive course like that. And I would say that learning about those details really caused me to like question, like, what do I really think on this issue? Like, for example, social services, quote unquote, again, such as like prostitution versus sex work. There are several different schools of thought on those things. The gender spectrum versus binary. It was just stuff that I had never had a chance to question before. So I was like, hang on, we got to do some deep digging here. What do I really believe and why?
Gaining knowledge was necessary for you to like see the other side of those beliefs?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm glad you bring up that wording of question, because I will add that also during the entire 2016 and prior political season that I guess our country is now in, yes, absolutely. That class and those new topics, and it caused me to, whatever you just said, yes. But in addition to that, that political climate as well, it was extremely valuable and important to be mindful of multiple perspectives and force myself to step outside of my own. I know that I have biases. It is unintelligent, in my opinion, to go forth without acknowledging those biases, because you learn more about your own biases when you step into somebody else's. So I found that to be extremely important, both in the class and in the current political state of things, to do that questioning, do that inner introspection, and question the things and people around me.
Okay, and okay, here's a kind of fun one. Tell me some of your favorite work stories.
Favorite work stories. The day that somebody told me, I think it was Dr. Roberts told me, Ms. Kokas, I found something in my room that had your name on it. And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, somebody printed a petition to have you hired at Lindbergh on my printer. I was like, first of all, why is it on your printer? Second of all, can I please have this in my hand? That's gold. And I think very much, I thought I knew who it was, but then I never heard another word about it. So that just sort of mysteriously fizzled, but I thought it was hilarious. I would definitely say the day. I have like a whole list in my phone, and they're mostly like positive things. There was one time where a kid who was probably experiencing possible stress or the desire to fit in put a staple into his leg to see what it felt like. This, of course, we understand was a younger student, we are coming at it without too much judgment in our hearts, but at the same time as it happened, I was like, how is this happening right now? And why are we now looking at the blood instead of making moves to clean it up and go to the nurse? Why are we just staring at this like it's a sideshow? Besides the fact that it kind of is. That was interesting. Preschool experience, that's just an entirely different animal. My favorite would be when the kids would wake up from nap, and they would be like still not really exactly woken up. And you know, it's funny when you're at a sleepover with your sibling or whatever and that happens to them. Mm-hmm. But you have to keep in mind, as an entire room of children wakes up from their nap, you know, who has peed, who has not. But on top of that, they're like, where am I? Where is Maddie? What's wrong with my bear? And then people still mumbling nonsense from their dreams, all happening at once over like 28 bodies. That's quite an adventure as well. So that's another good one. As far as this semester, I've only had wonderful experiences. I would say that the relationships that I have formed with each of the classes is pretty special, and that's not a story, but it is an observation. Aww. One that I quite like. Aww. So.
Okay, I have one that's about me.
Wonderful.
Can you tell me one of your happiest memories of me?
One of my happiest memories with Dale was definitely when we were working across the room from one another, and you and your friends started doing the old yield crab claw move, or perhaps it's some sort of reference to a cultural thing that I do not understand, across the room. And as I do, just in an effort to force my ugly face into your daily lives,
no,
I jump on the bandwagon.
Yes.
And just, I don't know, I guess the word I'm looking for is light that came into your face in that moment, like realizing I'm actually hilarious.
I think I knew before then.
That was one of my favorites though, because that was a very visible connection in addition to the intangible. It was also extremely meaningful when you told me that you loved me. That just about did me in. Aww, for that entire day.
I'm gonna cry.
Anything else could have happened and I would have been fine.
Aww.
For me and for my mom, we say about the work, that's what we call it, the work with the little ins, with the youths. No matter what I've said, no matter what I've done, it is meaningful if I've made the difference in the life of a child. And you're not a child, you're a person. Those are two very different leagues of human. What I'm saying basically is that it's incredibly special to know that I meant anything to you at all. So that's pretty special.
Update, I'm crying.
Update, I'm fumbling over my words while trying not to cry because I have to hold it in until the end of seventh hour tomorrow. Otherwise, I count it as a loss.
Also, I didn't tell you this, whoever's listening to this, but Miss Kokis, this is like her second to last day of being my student teacher, so this is an emotional time. Yes. And we're currently not doing well because we're both staring at each other.
Deep stares.
Yeah. Okay, I think I have one more question.
Okay, wonderful.
Maybe. I don't know. Okay, why did you agree to do this interview with me today?
Because I care about you. And I want to help you with your project. And because I was curious about what you might ask.
Well, now you know.
Now we were just curious together.
Yeah.
For like almost an hour.
Basically, it just reinforces your whole life.
That's okay. How I like to do things.
This has been Dale Zimmerman and Madeline Kokis talking about life and eventually crying.
Inevitably.
Yeah. Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.